tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. We have our good friend Megan Conley joining the show with Dan Z and a new WGN radio podcast from Eric Runge. But now, the favorite show of listeners from Oswego, Illinois. Buckle on up, because it's time for Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us Pretty Late, and I want to send an especially big thank you to our friends who showed up at the Child Serve fundraiser and Stand Up for Kids at Sage 773 tonight. Congratulations to Child Serve and, of course, Senator Dan Katowski for such a successful evening. And, you know, we talked a little bit during the show about the time I've spent in Springfield. You know, I haven't had the opportunity to go down to Springfield this year because of our move, and we're also trying to figure out what the, you know, what the stories are to tell. And I'm lucky enough to have people that work in Springfield that are really trying to make sure that the men and women of Illinois have access to their legislators, have the ability to have their voices heard. And we heard from an individual who said, hey, you've really got to talk to Megan Conley. She's got an amazing story. She's a young woman who was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma when she was 19 years old, and it relapsed. And there was when you're a young person and you're thinking about the rest of your life, there are things that probably come into focus. And we want to talk to Megan right now. Megan, how are you doing tonight?
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Is it kind of weird to like, okay, I got really sick and now I want to fight for people, and now late night radio, I've got to sit here and tell my story all over again to people. Does it get to be a little bit old at all?
Never. The more word I can spread, and you know, the more people that we reach is wonderful in my eyes.
Well, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Rolling Meadows.
In Rolling Meadows? And for most of your childhood, not a kid. Were you ever sick? I mean, more than a broken
and
bone or anything?
No, I hated the doctor. Uh-huh. I remember my mom actually bought me a book when I was like 7. I'd rather get a spanking than go to the doctor. So I was I'd rather do many things than go to the doctor. And lo and behold, many years later, I would be there quite frequently.
How was the Hodgkin's lymphoma discovered?
I had a very small lump on the side of my neck, and I actually first went to the doctor and they said, oh, it's nothing. It's a swollen lymph node. A couple weeks later, another one popped up on the other side. So that's when we had to return to the doctor, and, you know, he was starting to get concerned and brought up the possibility of cancer, which was a complete shocker, because 3 weeks prior I was told I had a virus of some sort, that it was just a swollen lymph node.
Oh, how terrifying.
Yeah.
And were you still on your parents' insurance when you were 19?
I was, yes. So I was in college, actually. I was away at Eastern Illinois. So I was still under my parents' insurance.
And that's the weirdest thing, is that we have to ask, right? Is it like, were you insured at the time? Because
exactly.
here's what can be a catastrophic diagnosis. What was the prognosis at the time? What did they tell you to expect?
My prognosis was very good. Highly curable, around 85 to 90%. Mm-hmm.
But what was the what was the round of treatment for you at that age at 19?
It was 6 months of chemotherapy.
Wow. And did they go through like how that could affect your body, what that meant for you for the long haul?
Yeah, I mean, they went through just what to expect and possible side effects, but you know, nothing's guaranteed, and that was quite frankly the most frightening thing.
Right.
You're given a prognosis, but you're not guaranteed.
Right. Prognosis is basically the stats that they have, their experience. You know, they kind of put the numbers into a computer and they say, well, this is what tends to happen with someone your age and the stage at which they diagnose it.
Exactly.
So after you'd gone through the 6 rounds of treatment, the 6 months of treatment. So you're 19. And then what happens when you're 20?
8 months after I was in remission, I had a relapse. So I was part of that less than 15% of Hodgkin's lymphoma patients who actually have a relapse.
This had to be, and obviously it's terrifying for you. Did your parents, I mean, do you get the feeling that they just felt so helpless? Here's their little girl.
Oh, completely. Yeah. It was, if you could have been in my kitchen the day we got that second phone call, it was not pleasant to say the least.
And one of the reasons that we are talking to you is that something came up then that you hadn't thought about preserving your ability to have kids
later in life, because when you find out you have chemo the first time, you're 19, you're young, you're like, okay, I want to get through this, I want to survive.
Exactly.
But now they tell you again, what how did the fertility preservation come up?
Being that I had relapsed, due to the highly toxic treatment, I was about to have chemotherapy, radiation, and a stem cell transplant. They told me that there was a significantly high chance that I could become infertile. And like you said, you know, survival was all that was on my mind at that point. How could I possibly think about my future and having kids when I just want to live? But unfortunately, that was the cards that I was dealt, and I come from a family of 6 kids. I want nothing more to have a biological family of my own one day. I know survival is number one, but once you become a survivor, just to know that you have an opportunity to still have children is something that, you know, is priceless.
Do you feel the urge to be able to make plans?
Absolutely.
And when they talked to you about the possibility of being infertile, what did they tell you your options were at that point?
So my options were either to harvest my eggs or basically do nothing. And with that, if I did choose to harvest my eggs, it would be about $10,000, which would not be covered by insurance. So on top of making this decision, you're also faced with the economic factor and burden of, do we have the means? Do we? And by we, I mean my parents, because I was 20 years old. I didn't have a penny to my name at that time. I was a college student. So,
I'm trying to imagine what the process would be, because they have to go in and extract the eggs. They have to sort of get you to the point where the eggs are extractable, right?
Exactly.
They have to use hormones in order to sort of stimulate that.
Right.
And then extract them. And so that's part of, I imagine what the price is involved. What did they say, you know, when they said it wasn't covered, they said that's just sort of cosmetic to preserve your fertility? What's the reasoning behind not being able to have that covered by insurance?
It just wasn't it's not under any policies. It's, a lot of insurance companies can cover other things such as wigs and things of that nature, which are cosmetic, but fertility, unfortunately, it's just something that I'm not quite sure if there's not enough research or evidence, but now, you know, it's factual that it compromises fertility.
And this seems like, I mean, that's a quality of life situation too, because, I mean, you're a young person, and this isn't just for women. This is also, you've gotten involved to the point where this is also making sure that men are able to procreate. Really.
Exactly. It's for both women and men. It does not discriminate, nor does cancer, as we all know. So,
wow. I had no idea that insurance companies, do you know if this is only by state? Is this every state? Is there a state in the United States that covers?
Yes. California just passed it not too long ago. And I believe Maryland as well. So there are states slowly coming on board, and hopefully, you know, if we keep advocating, Illinois will be next.
Well, let's talk about this some more. I need to take a break here, and I want to talk to you about getting involved and how you've come through the treatment, the going through the second time. I'm imagining it had to be more aggressive the second time around. And if there are any listeners who've gone through this, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. I know that there are a lot of people who are feel very strongly when it comes to preservation of life. And I wonder if this is something that all those folks who are protesting in front of maybe Planned Parenthood or things like that, do you also get involved when the fact that that these eggs and the possibility of life are not preserved, are not, and people don't have the resources to do that? Is it something that falls under that, or is it just like, well, tough? I'm guessing that there are some people who react that way. So let's come back and talk about that. 312-981-7200. We are in studio with Megan Connolly. Am I saying your last name correctly?
You are.
I mean, because people probably add a couple of syllables.
Connolly, you know.
Those people. See, I don't even get things that wrong. More after this on 720 WGN. Joining me in studio is Megan Connolly. At the age of 19, she was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and she battled that, was able to survive it. I mean, here's the thing is that, you know, we kind of hear about kids, young people coming down with illnesses, and we feel badly for them, and we go to fundraisers, we talk about it. And here's a story that I don't think many of us even consider. A friend of mine, Mary, had been diagnosed with breast cancer when she was in her 30s, and she struggled to try it. She didn't think that she would ever be able to have kids after she survived that, all the rounds of chemo, and she was fortunate enough. But sometimes people find out after they they go through rounds of chemo that they are not, they're infertile. And Megan has been traveling to Springfield, has been advocating for legislation to expand coverage to include the preservation of fertility for both men and women. How has this journey been going down and talking to legislators and telling your story to a bunch of strangers?
Well, terrifying to start, but also very empowering. I feel so fortunate that I am able to tell my story and, you know, advocate on behalf of all the young adults and cancer survivors out there and for future cancer survivors.
How about people who are worried that because you were sick before that maybe you're not as healthy as you could be? Like, they're worried that maybe, you know, this is the last thing you should be worrying about is whether or not you can have kids. What would you say to those folks?
You know, that's so unfair to say. I feel the healthiest I've ever been.
You've been clear for how many years?
So it's been 7 years now.
So 7 years, you've been perfectly healthy. So to the 312, there you go. That answers your question. You've been healthy for 7 years, so why shouldn't you be able to have a baby now?
Exactly.
Were you able to preserve your eggs?
I was. I was one of the fortunate ones, all thanks to my parents, though. Again, it's not covered by insurance, so that was a very, very costly procedure just for all the stimulation medications and the procedure itself.
And what kind of questions do you get from legislators? I'm guessing the 312 is not alone in their comments. What kind of things are legislators saying to you who are pushing back and saying, and basically kind of, I'd imagine some of them write you off like this.
Some of them are concerned that, you know, every patient then will go through fertility preservation when in reality, it's only the patients who are at a high risk of becoming infertile. They don't, the first time I was diagnosed, it was not recommended. So, you know, it's only, doctors only recommend it when it's medically necessary.
Right. So they're not like frivolously just yanking eggs out or sperm. I mean, yanking sperm sounds a little bit weird. I apologize to everyone involved. But they're not needlessly doing it.
Correct.
This is in a dire situation where, and I don't know why we would take away someone's ability to plan their future when they're, you know, they're most vulnerable.
Absolutely.
What kind of support are you getting from legislators? Has this gone through? This is starting in the Senate in Springfield.
It actually passed the House.
It did. Congratulations.
Just passed the Senate as well. Okay. So I believe there is an amendment right now that's being reviewed, but it did pass the House and the Senate on Tuesday. 43-10. So
that had to feel very good.
Amazing.
Yeah. So the next step then is the amendment. And then once they get that cleared away, it'll take the governor to sign that into legislation.
Yes.
Well, and I think that, you know, do you get involved in like the political side of this or what it means or like who's playing games or will this fall on that?
I don't, because I can't let that impact me. You know, I believe in what I'm doing and I kind of got to just believe in that and I can't play politics on this.
Has anybody asked you? And again, this is the same texter. Did you think? Well, you know, I guess maybe I'll just adopt. But you know, part of living your life and planning is part of that, as becoming a mother in the way that, you know, if people want to talk about a plan, you know, we are all able to find a way to procreate, you know, and maybe we hit a wall. Maybe some people are not able to, but if there is a way to preserve that, why wouldn't you want to follow that path, right?
Exactly. And, you know, nothing against other options of becoming a mother. There are, but I mean, to each their own. And if you have hopes and dreams of having a biological family and are able to make that dream come true, I think everyone deserves that chance.
I agree. And for those who are very religious and think, well, that just wasn't part of God's plan, maybe part of God's plan was for Megan to fight for people to be able to preserve that life within them, within men and women who, you know, for drastic reasons are become ill. Holy cats! We have this many phone calls? Megan, hold on a second. Let's see what we have. Let me go there's some listeners that want to call. Michael, can you make sure that she's got headphones? Can you check and see if those headphones work? Because you won't be able to hear the callers. Here we go. Can you hear me through your headphones?
Yes.
Hold on. Yeah, sorry. I didn't plan you for... I didn't think people were going to call. I figured people would be like, oh, this sounds really sad. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Excellent. And he'll show you where the knob is to turn it, like, the volume up and down. And we're going to take John first. Hi, John. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, honey. Boy, hey. It's starting off with a heavy topic right off the bat.
You know how we go sometimes.
Yeah.
It's important. It's not heavy. It's important.
Yes, it is. Anyway, in my family, all four of us children were adopted. because our those parents could not have children of their own. And we're all 3 years apart. It goes girl, boy, girl, and then me, the runt of the litter. The sister right above me, her husband and her decided that they were ready to have a family. Their first child was a daughter, beautiful as can be. And it was at that time that she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. So they decided to hurry up and have another child. And they had a son, so they were like, well, now that we have one of each flavor, you know, we're ready to have, she went ahead and had her, is it a hysterectomy for the female? I can't keep track of which.
Yes, it is, hysterectomy to have the, okay. Yeah, reproductive organs removed.
They came out of it flying colors, no problem. They got it all. But a few years later, the son was diagnosed autistic. And I've always wondered in the back of my mind if her condition had anything to do with his condition. And it's permanent. He cannot speak, but even today he knows who I am. And the problem is that he has occasional, I don't know if it's seizures or spasms, but he really scares his nieces when he has that condition come up.
Okay. Interesting.
So I've always wondered about her cancer affecting him, you know, if that's possible.
Well, I'm guessing there is a lot of research. Look, you know, I haven't had cancer and I have a son who, I mean, it can happen to anybody. It can happen to any egg. It can happen, whether it's a virus across the placenta or, you know, there could be 1,000 reasons why something happens in utero. We do. John, thank you so much for your comments and your questions, but I wish we could answer you, but that's something that seems unknowable as to whether or not the child's situation is in relation to the mother's cancer. We have to take a break here, and we've got a lot of calls coming in. We've got Catherine, Peter, and Joe on hold. Let me take a break here, and then the news. Do you mind sticking around a little
Absolutely.
Bit longer? Excellent, because we got calls and texts coming in. More after this on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for hanging out with us pretty late on the Patty V Show. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Several years ago, a good friend of mine was diagnosed with breast cancer, and one of the things that she was concerned about was being able to have kids later on in life. She was worried that chemotherapy would make her infertile. What's interesting is that her reconstructive surgery was covered by her insurance policy, but being able to preserve her fertility was not, which is a fascinating thing. I don't know the logic behind it. Reconstructive surgery is, and by the way, bringing this up does not mean I want insurance companies to stop covering that. It's just the idea that here we're saying we're going to make you whole again by making sure your appearance is maintained, or we do something to make sure that you feel good about the way you look, but we don't want to cover your ability to live the life that you want to by preserving your eggs, preserving your sperm. Joining me in studio is Megan Connolly. At the age of 19, she was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and she was able to beat that back, and then it was diagnosed by the time she was 20, it had come back, and that was when you were confronted with the idea of preserving your fertility.
That's correct.
Have I put this? I'm trying to find a way back in for those. You know, maybe people are getting in their cars, people who are trying to figure out what the conversation is about. And you've been going to Springfield. This has passed. The legislation has passed out of the Senate and the House. They're now adding an amendment. Do you know much about what the amendment might be? Or that's one of those things you're like, you guys take care of that.
Right. I'm not quite sure what the amendment exactly is.
When you were down there with the folks that want you to, you know, testify during these hearings, because I've always wondered about this. I've never testified myself in Springfield. I've mostly gone as an observer and to share the story of what goes on down there. How do they prepare you for having those conversations with legislators? It's hard, isn't it? Because you don't know what to expect.
I mean, you want to make as many connections as you can.
Right.
Most people have someone who's been touched by cancer.
Right.
The more connections you can make, the closer people feel to you and, you know, really
yes.
feel your pain.
Would you tell people who have something important in their lives like this, you know, to get involved, to have your voice heard, to meet your legislators?
Oh my gosh, it has been such a whirlwind. And just by going down there, I see change happening before my eyes. And no matter how long it takes, every trip has been worth it.
This is what I've been trying to tell people for 3 years, is your legislators are there to serve you. That's why they're called public servants. They're there to hear your stories and find out what's important in the lives of the people in their communities.
Absolutely.
That's what it's all about. Hey, Catherine, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, Oh, pretty good, Patty. You always find a topic when I'm trying to go to bed early. So
sorry.
But I appreciate it.
I told you, you can always listen to the rest of the podcast, but I love when you call in. What do you want to say?
Well, short story. I was 21 when I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's. My dad said the warranty went out. This was 30 years ago, so the technology wasn't there yet. We were told, you know, you may or may not have kids. You know,
right?
Thank you. Oh. Luckily, I mean, we had 4 pregnancies, 3 kids, beautiful, healthy, smart. And I just want to tell Megan, thank you for going to bat for the people now going through it. Because when I went through it 30 years ago, I think out of pocket, I paid $500 and everything else was picked up.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for
and
sharing
now
your story.
It's to have you take this horrible thing that happened to you and turn it around so that maybe someone will have that joy. And who knows, they may have a baby who will find a cure for cancer or find peace in the world, you know.
Isn't it interesting, Catherine, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, how many people want to get involved in, you know, when a woman is pregnant, making sure that she carries that baby to term. But when a woman wants to get pregnant, you know, we have a listener from the 815 who says, well, from the insurance company standpoint, saving fertility isn't medically necessary to treat lymphoma. Fertility treatment is seldom covered by insurance. So to our point about cosmetic surgery in the reconstructive surgery of a breast, breast reconstructive surgery is not also medically, it's not medically necessary to recover from breast cancer. And yet we do cover that.
And I just want to know who's making these decisions.
Correct. Right. Well, apparently the 815 thinks that the insurance company perhaps is making the medically necessary decision.
Our only option was prayer. You know, we just prayed, you know, and if it was fate, if it was meant to be, we would have kids. And the good Lord, you know, did bless us.
With but, 4. I mean, there it, you go.
I want to thank Megan, though, for taking this on.
Oh, thank you
and
so much.
Stay strong, girl.
Thank okay? you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Patty.
Thank you, Catherine. Have a great evening. I'll talk to you again soon. Thank you. Here's Peter. Peter, what did you want to say?
Hi there. I've called in many times before. The last time I talked to you, I only gave you about 10 different voices.
Which one do you want to give us this time?
Well, I suppose I could use some sort of voice, but I just stick with my own this time.
It's a great
voice. My story, well, thank you. You're I've welcome. tried to cultivate it ever since I discovered WC Fields.
Oh, that's right. I remember that one. Sure.
Anyway, I was 22 when what looked to me to be about a golf ball sized blob embedded in my right thigh, just at the groin, was removed and discovered to be Hodgkin's.
Wow.
And from there, an insurance luckily covered a lot, but fertility, no. I went from the local guy who took this out to University of Chicago to get treated. And in 77, things were kind of crude. They had a spleenectomy because they couldn't test. They had no ability to biopsy the spleen, which means I'm missing one of the 4 types of T cells. That's a normal person's body defenses from infection.
Okay.
So I'm always got to be cautious about that. The massive amount of radiation, it was high-energy X-ray that I had and kind of an inverted Y with the both legs having a little stub down into them and then coming up and making kind of a bend right under the diaphragm to cover the liver. And, long story short, I still can't go outside without a T-shirt on.
Oh, boy.
At least tank right. top because the skin
sure.
in that area I'm certain it's sensitive, but the one time about a year after the radiation therapy that I did get caught out and got irradiated by the sun, I burned everywhere but that area.
Really? Oh boy.
I get what my dad would call a Scottish tan. But that area didn't react.
Huh.
And but it's I bless this young gal for what she's doing. I did pay for my own preservation, because the area that got irradiated was within a within about an inch of well, I don't know what the polite term would be on the radio, but I could always just say family jewels.
Oh boy. Right.
But the and I am infertile. I got tested a while back out of my own pocket just to see. But I quit paying for storage about a decade ago. Never made use of it.
But you wanted to have that option, right?
I wanted to have the option. My lifetime dream has always been the middle American, I don't know, maybe it goes back to the first TV I got inoculated with, like Leave It to Beaver, just middle America, family, you know, wife, kids.
Sure. Yeah, I think a lot of us have that dream.
You know, that kind of dream, and got kind of turned on its side. Now, I love what she's got. She's got hope and ambition. I shut down when I went through, after I went through this. I didn't expect to live long. I dropped long-term planning. I lived for the now, and I'm paying for it now, with not much of a savings to try to turn into retirement. Anyway, and I'm still dealing with the after effects of the radiation therapy.
Oh, really?
Internally.
Oh, boy.
The only things that, the only thing that helps me with my lower gut problems happens to be something that I cannot obtain legally right now, because I don't fit one of the 40 listed items that our state allows for herbal medication.
Sure, hopefully that'll change in the next year or so. I think that there's a move to expand and any of the needs for medicinal marijuana. They're trying to expand that. Even Governor Rauner, I think, is trying to expand that one.
Mm-hmm.
Have you? Well, I don't want to ask if you've dabbled to see if it has any positive effects.
I ask away. I really don't care. Who knows? I'm so upfront about this anymore.
Right.
No, I have had I don't know how graphic you want me to get. I don't want to get graphic.
Fair enough.
I have had to live in or near a bathroom for at least the first half of my day.
Oh.
Every day.
Since you were diagnosed?
Since the radiation therapy.
Since the radiation. Okay.
Damaged my lower gut, and it's still damaged. There is a condition called radiation colitis. And it's something you're supposed to recover from and get over after the radiation goes away. Nobody told my intestinal tract.
Right.
And it hasn't. It has not recovered. Now, while I was undergoing the radiation therapy, I also found out that I'm allergic to just about every anti-nausea medicine there is. And one
That's
of the doctors,
not helpful. Right.
Yeah. And one of the doctors, no, I found out the hard way with a grand mal seizure from one of them. But the doctor, afterwards, when I was back up at the University of Chicago, down in their what they call the tunnel, which is where they do their radiation therapies, second sub-basement.
Sure.
They
in the bowels, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the doctor said, well, I can't really officially tell you this, but some of our chemotherapy patients are having good success using marijuana to control their nausea.
Right.
Because the only other option they gave me was to be an inpatient for the 2 months of daily treatments and be on morphine drip.
Peter, what a long haul you've had. And I hope that that there's something that that brings you some comfort. I have to run, Peter. I know that you're sharing quite a bit of your story and being very vulnerable about it and talking about it on our show while we're talking to Megan Connolly about her story as well. All important stories to share with each other. I've got to take a break here. More after this on 720 WGN. Thank you, Peter. I want to thank Megan Connolly for joining us in studio again. If you're just joining our conversation, she was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma when she was was only 19 years old, and it reoccurred again when she was 20. And that's when she's realized that her fertility was vulnerable. She might have been infertile after that, and it actually costs out-of-pocket resources from her parents. Now, I know that a lot of people think, oh, well, you know, you can think all different kinds of things, but first of all, let's think about people who realize they can't conceive. You only have to prove, or at least tell your doctor you tried for a year, and your infertility is covered. I don't know what the numbers are like, but I'm pretty sure those numbers are pretty high for people who are like, oh, we've been trying for a year. And I'm not saying anyone's gaming it, but if you're going to go after somebody who is just saying, hey, let's take into consideration the men and women who are diagnosed and want to preserve their fertility. And for those of you who are wondering, it's about 1,000 people. It's not a huge, it's not an additional burden on insurance companies. It only affects about 1,000 people annually in Illinois. And of the nearly 320,000 U.S. women diagnosed with breast cancer each year, 29,000 are 45 years or younger, and the risk of permanent infertility is, after chemotherapy, it ranges from 20 to 70%. Now, this legislation has passed. This is House Bill 2617. It has passed out of the House and out of the Senate by bipartisan support. Now, before you go, Megan, what do you want people to know about this legislation and where they can really, you know, what it means to you?
I would love people to know that just cancer has the ability to take away so many things from, you know, a young woman or a young man, that if we can help them preserve one thing and have hope for their future, that's amazing. There's so many struggles that patients have to deal with, that one less burden is something that's truly cherished by many patients.
Thank you so much, Megan. That's beautifully put. And thank you so much for telling your story here, going down to Springfield, speaking for others who really, I think, will benefit from the stories that you've shared with them, and making it personal. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Patty.
Have a great evening. We'll see you again.
All right.
See you at Knife and Tyne.
Yes.
We've got to go to Knife and Tyne.